Morning. If you have a Bible, you may want to turn to 1 Kings chapter 18. We're going to go there in a moment. But if we can have the presentation on, please. We are carrying on, and today is the third in our four-part series of God with Us. A few weeks ago, Mark spoke about God with us in the valley. Last week, John spoke about God with us in the storm. And today, I'm speaking about God with us in the wilderness. And I don't know about you, when you think of the word wilderness, two passages came to my mind. I thought of Jesus when he was tempted and tested, and I thought of the Israelites when they were released from Egypt and they went into the wilderness for 40 years. So I want to talk about those two as well, but as well as that, I want to talk about another time when the Bible mentions someone being in a wilderness, and it's not a time that we think of particularly as much. So I want to read that passage and hope that you can know some of the other stories as well, because I'll be referring to it. This isn't going to come onto the screen, so if you've got a Bible, feel free to follow along, or also just feel free to listen. Some of you may know Norbert and I have been doing, or just started a course, and one of the things that we discussed in the course last time was that over the last 20 years or so, the amount of Bible that we read on a Sunday morning has sort of gone down, and we don't read as much. So you're welcome for the large passage I'm going to read today. So, 1 Kings chapter 18, starting at verse 20. King Ahab said to all the people of Israel to gather the prophets at Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near to the people and said, "How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." And the people did not answer a word. Then Elijah said to the people, I alone, am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let two bulls be given to us, and let us choose for the bull for themselves and cut it into pieces and lay it on the wood, but no fire be put to it. And I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood, but no fire put to it. And you call upon the name of your God, and I'll call upon the name of the Lord, the God who answers by fire. He is God. And all the people answered, "It's well spoken." Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose for yourself one bull and prepare it first, for you are many, and call upon the name of your God, but put no fire to it." And they took the bull that was given to them. They prepared it and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, "Oh, Baal, answer us." But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar, and they had made. And at noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, "Come on, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he's musing, or he's relieving himself, or maybe he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and he needs to be awakened." So they cried louder and cut themselves, as was their custom, with swords and lances, until the blood gushed out upon them. I like that verse. And as the midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. Then Elijah said, "Come near to me." And all the people came near, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. And Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the Lord had said, to whom the word of the Lord came, saying, "Israel shall be your name." And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench around the altar, as great as would contain two seers of seed. And he put on the wood in order and cut the bull into pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, "Fill four jars with water and put it on the burnt offering on the wood." And he did so. And he said, "Do it a second time." And they did it a second time. And then he said, "Do it a third time." And they did. And the water ran around the altar and filled the trench with water. At the time of the offering of the oblation, Elijah the prophet came near and said, "O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and that I have done these things that your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that these people may know that you are God, and that you have turned their hearts back." Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, "The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." And Elijah said to them, "Seize the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook of Kishon and slaughtered them there. And Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of the rushing of rain. So Ahab went up and ate and drank, and Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel. And there he bowed himself down on the earth and put his face between his knees. He said to his servant, go up now and look towards the sea. He went up and said, there's nothing. He said, go again 7 times. And at the 7th time, behold, a little cloud the size of a man's hand is rising from the sea. And he said, go up and say to Ahab, prepare your chariot and go down, lest the rain stop you. And a little while the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab rode all the way to Jezreel. And the hand of the Lord was on Elijah. And he gathered up his garment and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and how he had killed the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a message out to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me, and more so, if I do not make your life as like one of them by this time tomorrow. And then he was afraid, and he arose and he ran for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and he left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, it's enough now, Lord. Take my life away, for I am no better than my father's. And he lay down and slept under the broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again and touched him and said, arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you. And he arose and he ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. And there he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken the covenant, thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke to pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice that said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he answered, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I alone am left. And now they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, go on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint as king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shephat of Mehibosheth, you shall anoint as the prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed down to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So Elijah departed. And he found Elisha, the son of Shephat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him. And he was with the 12th. Elijah passed him by and cast his cloak upon him. And he left his oxen and ran after Elisha and then said, let me kiss my father and mother, and then I shall follow you. And he said, go back again, for what have I done to you? And he returned from following him and took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen and gave it to the people and they ate. And then he arose. And he went after Elijah and assisted him. Whew. Okay, so where have we gone and where are we going? So Mark spoke a few weeks ago about God being with us in the valley. And he spoke about how the valley can be a dangerous place. And he mentioned that there are wild animals and there may be robbers and things that come at you when you're in the valley. And we spoke about the tree of Baca, I think it was, which the sap would roll down. It was a place of weeping, a place of sadness, but the springs would bubble up, and we should try and gather that and harness that and dig wells for the future. And then John spoke last week about how storms suddenly come on us, and they're unexpected events, and he mentioned a few, such as redundancy was one of them, he said as well. And they often bring fear and confusion to our lives. And they can often be life-changing events. So, what is my definition for wilderness? I want to suggest that this morning, a wilderness is something more that you walk into, something that creeps up on you without you necessarily knowing. As you're going along your journey, these things come in your way, and before you know it, you're in the middle of nowhere. It's an extended period of time. We read about Elijah, and it was 40 days he was in the wilderness. Moses was up the mountain for 40 days. Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days. And there's other references as well to 1,312 days and 20 days or something like that. But also it goes up to 40 years where the Israelites were wandering through the desert. So it seems like a long, extended period of time. And I think especially in our culture where everything is fast and instant, 40 years to us, it would seem like a lifetime. And if we are stuck in that wilderness for a long time, it feels like it goes on forever. And that may be even more exacerbated, as I said, in our pace of life at the moment. And the consequence of the reason why you're in the wilderness could be many reasons. These three examples. Elijah made a choice. He fled for his life. He had run, and I'm sure this is still the world record to this day. He ran 17 to 20 miles from the mountain to Jezreel and beat a horse and cart on its way with a storm cloud behind him, and he got to the gates and stopped, and then he was struck by fear and he turned and ran back the other way. It was his choice to go into the wilderness. It could be a consequence. The Israelites were fearful. They didn't respect God when he said, go into the land and take it, and they doubted that God's power would be with them. And so as a consequence of their lack of faith, they wandered the wilderness for 40 years. And obviously Jesus, it was part of his calling. The Bible says the Spirit led Jesus into the wilderness to be tempted and tested. It was part of the thing that he had to go through. So sometimes a wilderness experience could be because of fear. It could be a choice, whether we realize it or not. It could be a consequence of something that happens to us. Or it could be just part of our daily life and part of our calling that we have to go through. And it could be many other reasons as well. But I couldn't think of any more that began with C, so I decided to leave those. So it could be a choice, it could be a consequence, or it could be a calling. This one. Okay, so I want to try and talk about some ways that maybe we can reflect on God so that when we're going through the wilderness time, we can think and maybe get our mind around it. Some of the things we've already been spoken about this morning. But I want to suggest that first of all, we need to remember the power of our past. The reason I read that whole passage was I wanted to put the wilderness in context. We often talk about, in the Sunday school groups, the Mount Carmel experience, where Elijah is beating these 450 men with God's power, and God sends miraculously the fire to lap up not only the bull, but everything else that's with it as well. And it's a clear, powerful statement. And the people shouting, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. And that's what Elijah means. Elijah's mission was to turn people back to God. And the name Elijah means Yahweh, or the Lord, he is God. So as if on Mount Carmel, they're shouting, Elijah, Elijah, like you might see at a football match. But Elijah knew that that was his mission. His mission was to turn people back to God. And he seems to forget that as soon as that instant of fear comes. And it was a serious fear. Jezebel had wiped out hundreds, if not thousands, of the prophets of Yahweh. But Elijah gets that seed of doubt in his mind, and he forgets everything that goes on. Similarly, the Israelites, when they're in Egypt, we often think of those 10 plagues as just being 10 brilliant acts of power. But God says in Exodus 12, he says, I will wipe out the gods of Egypt. And the next slide shows the 10 of the gods that would have been absolutely humiliated by the 10 plagues. The first one, Happy, which is a cool name for a god, isn't it? Happy was the god of the Nile, but I don't think he was very happy when it turned to blood and he could do nothing about it. Hektet, it was the frog god. So God, the frogs were supposedly sacred, a bit like we think of they worshipped cats as well, didn't they? And the frogs would have been precious to them. And yet, with this curse, with this plague, they came out of the river and they covered everything. They would have been squashed under the wheels of the chariots. They would have been in their cooking pots. And people would have thought, oh no, what is Hektet going to think of me because I've done this to these sacred frogs? And Geb, the frog, the god of the dust, the gnats came from the dust, and it goes through Ra, the son of the sun god, and the darkness fell, and Ra could do nothing about it until we get to Pharaoh, the so-called living god. And God says, I am the living God, and there's the death to the firstborn son. These plagues weren't just things that we can tell to our children. They were acts of power that God says, I am bigger than any god that starts with a little g, because I've got a capital at the beginning of my name. And I can wipe any of these out. But the Israelites, they seem to forget that as well. As this not long after their wandering, that Moses goes up to the mountain for 40 days, and the people already making themselves a different god and worshipping that. They seem to forget the God who made them, who God that showed them the power in the past, will show them power in the future as well. Okay. You might argue that this verse is slightly out of context, but there's a verse in Revelation chapter 12, and it says, you shall overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of his testimony. And it's talking about the end times, when the dragon is coming and there's a big battle in heaven. But the verse, I don't think, is taking it too far to say that that's true for us as well. We definitely overcome by the blood of the Lamb, but we have power in our testimony as well. I was asked the other day at work whether I had made a commitment as a Christian myself or whether I was just brought up through the church. And the answer is both. I was brought up. I was probably 2 weeks old the first time I went to church. And I went through all the way through church, through Sunday school. And then I made a commitment when I got through, well, initially at the age of 6, and then I was baptized at the age of 14. And so it was my decision. But I'm so thankful for the way that I was brought up. And I used to think, I haven't got a testimony. I haven't got a story. It's a bit boring. I was born, my parents convinced me to become a Christian, and now here I was. I haven't got that life-changing event. Now I'm going to heaven. It's not really a big deal. But that's not true, is it? We all have a story, and we all have power in our story, and we all have these amazing miracles that we've seen in the past. And I could have said, I've seen these powerful acts, that I've seen miracles, I've seen wonders, I've seen healings. I know that God is alive today, and it is my decision. But often, we forget. Often when that seed of doubt comes, or that grain of fear comes, we think, God, are you still there? I've seen you in the past, but we forget, and we come. We sing that song, Blessed Be Your Name. When I'm on the road marked with suffering, still I will sing, Blessed Be Your Name. And sometimes that's the hardest time to sing, Blessed Be Your Name, because we often doubt what he has done in the past. Okay, the next one is that provisions are provided. The bread is given to Elijah. Elijah goes and he wanders into the wilderness, he sits under the broom tree and he prays, and we'll come on to that a little bit in a moment, and God sends him an angel with, I've always been told it was bread, but when I was reading that it was cake, and that sounds so much better. A cake cooked on hot stones was brought to Elijah, and it sustained him, and he was told to eat it. In fact, he's told to eat it twice, so he got seconds as well, which is really, really good. And Elijah went in the strength of that into the wilderness for 40 days and for 40 nights. Manna was given each day to the Israelites when they were wandering. They were grumbling about food, and God provided miraculously. He sent manna from heaven, he sent quail, water from rocks. These great, powerful signs. And he not just only did it once, he did it every single day, 6 days a week apart from the Sabbath. And he told them, go out and gather as much as you can eat that day, but don't keep it, because it'll go smelly, and it'll go rotten, it'll go stinky, a bit like the fridge that we've got at the back. And they were told not to keep it, except on the day before the Sabbath, when they were told to gather more. And if they did gather it, it went moldy, but on the Sabbath it didn't. It preserved and it stayed and sustained them. And the reason he did that was because they wanted them to trust him daily. Yes. God didn't want them to gather it all in and say, this is what God has given me. I'm going to keep taking from this one moment. He said, no, I want you to trust me. Trust me daily, which is why Jesus encourages us to pray. Give us this day our daily bread. Not give us this week everything we need on a Sunday and then see us through until next week when we'll come to you again in the chapel and we'll ask for again and that'll see us through till next week. No, Jesus says every day, come to me and ask and I will give you daily bread. And this is the daily bread. We need to be reading this book. We need to be eating his bread, taking his word in every single day. Maybe it's just one word, maybe it's just one verse, but something in here can sustain you through the day. So again, on the course, a guy called Ali, he said he loves reading the Old Testament. And he says that he reads the Old Testament until he finds Jesus. And he says sometimes it's just one or two verses, sometimes it's a whole chapter, but Jesus is in there. Jesus is the bread of life. And have you ever stopped to think what the manna tasted like? The Bible describes it, first of all, what is this stuff? Man alive, where has this come from? And then he says it tasted like honey wafers. Why honey wafers? Because they would go into the land of honey. They would go into the land of milk. And God said every day, I'll give you a little bit. Just remember, this is what is in store for you. And in Ephesians, it says as well, the Holy Spirit is a bit like our endowment policy. It's a bit like our guarantee that one day we will receive everlasting life and a spiritual body in heaven. God promises and he gives us a little bit now and a little bit tomorrow and a little bit the day after so that we can trust him with our daily needs and we can go through life in that way. And Jesus himself said, I am the bread of life. I can't remember the next bit. There you go. I am the living bread that comes down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I give is the life for the world is my flesh. And later we're going to celebrate communion together. Jesus is the bread of life. Jesus came down. Jesus was the manna that was given in the wilderness. That was Jesus. So Ali wouldn't have to read very much until he found Jesus in that passage. Jesus is the manna that we need to be taking every day. Okay. So when does God sustain us? Well, at the beginning, God provided for Elijah in the wilderness. He fed him first, and then he said, 40 days you will travel into the wilderness and you'll follow me. So God gives us our provision at the beginning. With the Israelites, God provided bread throughout their wilderness journey so that they would be sustained through. And Jesus, we're told, after his 40 days, that he was ministered to by the angels of heaven. And I think that must mean that some of God's food from heaven was brought down because it says he was hungry and God serves us at our weakest point. And so the angels brought Jesus the food from heaven and it sustained him for his next part of the journey, which we'll go on to in a moment. So God is with us at the beginning of the wilderness and he sustains us then. God is with us in the middle of our wilderness journey and he sustains us through. And God is with us at the end of our wilderness journey, and he prepares us for what is coming next. Yes. Elijah needed food at the beginning. The Israelites needed food in the middle, but Jesus didn't take anything until the end. Yes, he was physically hungry, but what did he dwell upon? Well, every time he was tempted and tested, the devil came at him, and Jesus stood and answered him with Deuteronomy. Come on, well, there's not much good in there, surely. But no, there is. Jesus stands on Deuteronomy and beats the devil because that is his bread of life. This, the Bible, even Deuteronomy, is where Jesus gets his sustenance from. And we need to be following in that example as well. Very good CGI and graphics here for this next little bit. Okay, so Elijah comes and he sits under the broom tree. And I didn't know what a broom tree was, so I had a quick look on Google, and it's basically a tree. Okay, and it grows in difficult places because its roots go down really far so it can find the moisture that's locked in where there's nothing that's fallen in from the ground. So the roots are really deep, but it can grow big enough to give shade, as in this example here. And Elijah, he comes and he sits under the shade of the tree. He gets his protection from the sun. He curls himself up into a ball and he says, I've had enough. I'm done. The Carmel is my mountaintop experience. I don't want anything more. Take my life. I'm done. And God says, no, no, no. God said, eat this and then you can go on further. But we can too be like that. In a day where one in four of us will suffer from mental health problems every year, where antidepressant drugs are going up year on year on year, we can sit under our tree and maybe it looks a bit more like this.
And under our tree, we wrap ourselves in worry. We wrap ourselves in depression, in shame, in fear, anxiety, in bitterness and defeat. And we sit in our own mind's eye and our own thoughts and we say, God, that's enough. God, I'm done. Take me now. And God says, no. And he says, well done for coming to the tree. Well done for recognizing that you can't do it on your own. Well done for asking you can die. And we have to do that. Every day we have to come back, not to a tree that looks like this, but to this tree. We have to come back to the cross. And we have to sit under the cross, under the shade of his arms, and say, Jesus, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Jesus, help me. I want to die. And if we come back to this tree, then it's not just shade that we get. It's the blessing that we get. We get the light from this tree. The darkness, the tree that's made us dark, it can be taken away because of the blood and the love of Jesus. So we've gone through the wilderness. We've sat under the tree. And then Elijah is then called to another mountain, and God speaks to him, not through the wind, not through the fire, not through the earthquake, but through the still, small voice. And that is still how God speaks today. Yes, God can speak through power and through fire, like he did on Mount Carmel, but God can also speak in that still, small voice. When you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and God speaks to you then in a tiny whisper, sometimes audibly, sometimes just in your heart, God speaks however he chooses. And when we come to the edge of our wilderness, it's the start of something else. And it could be the start of something special. When the Israelites were at the edge of the wilderness, Moses dies, and then Joshua takes over. And in Joshua 1, it describes the promised land. It goes back again, and there's a few different times when God says, you will have this land, this land, this land. And the boundaries, there's no southern boundary, so it's a bit confusing with that straight line going across. But some commentaries have this as the promised land that they should have taken. This was the land that was promised to the Israelites. And in Elijah, in 1 Kings, he's told to go and anoint Elisha as the prophet, to go and anoint Jehu and Ahaziel as the two kings. They're given their job, they're given their mandate of what they have to do next. But if we go to the next line, the green line is the maximum territory that Israel ever took. That's a lot less than what they were told to claim. We read in that end of 1 Kings 19, Elijah did go to Elisha, he found him and he put his cloak around him and then he seems just to walk off. And Elijah has to catch up and say, wait, can I do this, this and this? And he worships God and then he catches him back up again. And Elijah almost just sort of fobs him off. He says, what have I done to you? Go and do what you want. And then he catches him back up again and it says he does serve him. And there's no record at all of Elijah actually going to Jehu or Haziel and anointing them as kings. In fact, Elisha does it for one of them and the other one I don't think is mentioned. Neither of them complete their tasks. Their tasks are left incomplete. God has all this promise and they take a fraction of it. They do a small part. And that can be the same for us as well. That our mission, when we get to the edge of our wilderness, God says, I have all this in store for you. And we're just happy with the bits that surface us. I wonder whether the one out of the three that Elijah chose was the one who was to take his place. I wonder whether Elijah was still done in. He still had enough. And he said, I'm not really worried about who's king. All I want is someone to succeed me. Now, I might be in a bit harsh on Elijah, possibly, because there are then 6 or 7 great years when he does train up Elijah. And at the end, God doesn't even grant Elijah his prayer then. Elijah's prayer was, take me now, let me die. And God says, I'm never letting you die. And he just picks him up and takes him to heaven. So Elijah never dies. He never gets that prayer answered in the way he wanted. Am I being a bit harsh on Elijah? I don't know. I know he's in heaven. So it's all good at the end. Okay, but Jesus is also given another mandate. After his wilderness experience, he has dwelt on the past. He knows that God has said, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. And Jesus knows his purpose and identity. So he goes in the wilderness and he doesn't forget the past. He knows what God has said to him. And so he conquers. And then at the end of his wilderness, he goes into the next stage of his life, which is to seek and save the lost. Jesus says that about himself in Luke 19:10. I have come to seek and to save the lost. Not just lost people, but that which was lost. That which was lost was that relationship, that Eden experience where God and man walked together in the garden. That's where we should be, in a garden, not in a wilderness. And Jesus says, I've come to restore that. I've come to restore the goodness of Eden. I've come to bring you the new city of Jerusalem. And you can get there through my cross. And Jesus, 3 years later, he hung back on that tree and he said, it is finished. Jesus completed his task. Jesus didn't just do part of it. He didn't just save Israel. He didn't just save Elijah. He didn't just save the people who were alive at that time. It is finished. My mission is done. I have accomplished it. Not I am finished, like Elijah said, but it is finished. And because it is finished, we can celebrate today. Because it is finished, we do not need to sit under that tree and fear the anxiety and the depression, because it is finished and he has overcome. Now, I know it's easy for me to stand here and say that. I've only had, I'd probably say, two experiences where I've had a panic attack. And ironically, both of them are a result of church life, because I know it happens here as well. Okay, but I know people struggle with this every single day, and I don't want to belittle that at all. And I don't in any way want to say, don't take any medication. I know Christians have done that in the past. You shouldn't have medication. I think you should. Medication is a blessing from God, and we do need to take our medication. But we also need our meditation. We also need to come to that cross daily and say, Jesus, would you fill me? Jesus, I die. I've done it. I can't do this on my own. I come to your tree. I sit under the shelter and I get your light. And in that way, God will be with us through the wilderness. Amen.